The Meeting of Minds. The principle of mind chemistry is the basis and cause for practically all the soulmate and eternal triangle cases, so many of which unfortunately find their way into the divorce courts and meet with popular ridicule from ignorant and uneducated people who manufacture vulgarity and scandal out of one of the greatest of nature's laws. The entire civilized world knows that the first 2 or 3 years of association after marriage are often marked by much disagreement, of a more or less petty nature. These are the years of adjustment. If the marriage survives them, it is more than apt to become a permanent alliance. These facts no experienced married person will deny. Again, we see the effect without understanding the cause. While there are other contributing causes, yet in the main, lack of harmony during these early years of marriage is due to the slowness of the chemistry of the minds in blending harmoniously. Stated differently, the electrons or units of the energy called the mind are often neither extremely friendly nor antagonistic upon first contact, but through constant association they gradually adapt themselves in harmony, except in rare cases where association has the opposite effect of leading eventually to open hostility between these units. It is a well-known fact that after a man and a woman have lived together for 10 or 15 years, they become practically indispensable to each other, even though there may not be the slightest evidence of the state of mind called love. Moreover, this association and relationship not only develops a natural affinity between the two minds sexually, but it actually causes the two people to take on a similar facial expression and to resemble each other closely in many other marked ways. So marked is the effect of the chemistry of the human mind that any experienced public speaker may quickly interpret the manner in which his statements are accepted by his audience. Antagonism in the mind of but one person in an audience of 1,000 may be readily detected by the speaker who has learned how to feel and register the effects of antagonism. Moreover, the public speaker can make these interpretations without observing or in any manner being influenced by the expression on the faces of those in his audience. On account of this fact, an audience may cause a speaker to rise to great heights of oratory or heckle him into failure, without making a sound or denoting a single expression of satisfaction or dissatisfaction through the features of the face. All master salesmen know the moment, the psychological time for closing, has arrived. Not by what the prospective buyer says, but from the effect of the chemistry of his mind as interpreted or felt by the salesman. Words often belie the intentions of those speaking them, but a correct interpretation of the chemistry of the mind leaves no loophole for such a possibility. Every able salesman knows that the majority of buyers have the habit of affecting a negative attitude almost to the very climax of a sale. Every able lawyer has developed a sixth sense whereby he is enabled to feel his way through the most artfully selected words of the clever witness who is lying and correctly interpret that which is in the witness's mind through the chemistry of the mind. Many lawyers have developed this ability without knowing the real source of it. They possess the technique without the scientific understanding upon which it is based. Many salesmen have done the same thing. One who is gifted in the art of correctly interpreting the chemistry of the minds of others may, figuratively speaking, walk in at the front door of the mansion of a given mind and leisurely explore the entire building, noting all its details, walking out again with a complete picture of the interior of the building without the owner of the building so much as knowing that he has entertained a visitor. It will be observed in Lesson 11 on Accurate Thought that this principle may be put to a very practical use, having reference to the principle of the chemistry of the mind. Enough has already been stated to introduce the principle of mind chemistry and to prove with the aid of your own everyday experiences and casual observations that the moment two minds come within close range of each other, a noticeable mental change takes place in both, sometimes registering in the nature of antagonism and at other times registering in the nature of friendliness. Every mind has what might be termed an electric field. The nature of this field varies depending upon the mood of the individual mind back of it and upon the nature of the chemistry of the mind creating the field. It is my belief that the normal or natural condition of the chemistry of any individual mind is the result of his physical heredity, plus the nature of thoughts which have dominated his or her mind. I mean, That very mind is continuously changing to the extent that the individual's philosophy and general habits of thought change the chemistry of mind. This is my theory. That any individual may voluntarily change the chemistry of his or her mind so that it will attract or repel all with whom it comes in contact is a known fact. Stated in another manner, any person may assume a mental attitude which will attract and please others or repel and antagonize them, and this is without the aid of words or facial expression or other form of bodily movement or demeanor. Go back now to the definition of a mastermind, a mind which grows out of the blending and coordination of two or more minds in a spirit of perfect harmony, and you will catch the full significance of the word harmony. Two minds will not blend, nor can they be coordinated unless the element of perfect harmony is present. That is the secret of success or failure of practically all businesses and social partnerships.
If you do not believe in cooperation, look what happens to a wagon that loses a wheel.
Every sales manager and every military commander and every leader in any other walk of life understands the necessity of an esprit de corps, a spirit of common understanding and cooperation in the attainment of success. This mass spirit of harmony of purpose is obtained through discipline, voluntary or forced, of such a nature that the individual minds become blended into a master mind. That is, the chemistry of the individual minds is modified in such a manner that these minds blend and function as one. The methods through which this blending process takes place are as numerous as the individuals engaged in the various forms of leadership. Every leader has a method of coordinating the minds of his or her followers. One will use force. Another uses persuasion. One will play upon the fear of penalties, while another plays upon rewards. The aim will be to reduce the individual minds of a given group of people to the point that they may be blended into a mass mind. You will not have to search deeply into history of statesmanship, politics, business, or finance to discover the technique employed by the leaders in these fields in the process of blending the minds of individuals into a mass mind. The really great leaders of the world, however, have been provided by nature with mind chemistry favorable as a nucleus of attraction for other minds. Napoleon was a notable example of a man possessing the magnetic type of mind which had a very decided tendency to attract all minds with which it came in contact. Soldiers followed Napoleon to certain death without flinching because of the impelling or attracting nature of his personality, and that personality was nothing more nor less than the chemistry of his mind.
Hill is here creating his own definition and explanation of charisma, which originally meant a kind of religious power or leadership that made certain individuals unusually magnetic. The subject fascinated religious and political historians, psychologists, and other social scientists for many years. For a century after his death, because of the power he apparently was able to exert on those around him, Napoleon Bonaparte was a prime example of a charismatic leader. When Hill first wrote The Law of Success, Napoleon Bonaparte held the same kind of interest for many people that Hitler holds today.
The making of the mastermind. No group of minds can be blended into a mastermind if one of the individuals of that group possesses an extremely negative mind. The negative and positive minds will not blend in the sense here described as the mastermind. Lack of knowledge of this fact has brought many an otherwise able leader to defeat. Any able leader who understands this principle of mind chemistry may temporarily blend the minds of individuals into a mass mind, but the composition will disintegrate almost the very moment the leader's presence is removed from the group. The most successful life insurance sales organizations and other sales forces meet once a week, or more often, for the purpose of... Of what? For the purpose of merging the individual minds into a mastermind which will, for a few days, serve as a stimulus to the individual minds. It may be, and generally is true, that the leaders of these groups do not understand what actually takes place in these meetings. The routine of such meetings is usually given over to talks by the leader and other members of the group and occasionally from someone outside of the group. Meanwhile, the minds of the individuals are contacting and recharging one another. The brain of a human being may be compared to an electric battery, in that it will become exhausted or run down, causing the owner of it to feel despondent, discouraged, and lacking in energy. Who is so fortunate as never to have had such a feeling? The human brain, when in this depleted condition, must be recharged, and the manner in which this is done is through contact with a more vital mind or minds.
A great deal of New Age thinking and the study of the practices of Asian philosophy and religion have created a number of ways unknown to Hill of recharging the mind. Yoga, meditation, various forms of prayer, spinning, and other techniques all have their devotees. The latter part of the 20th century also saw tremendous interest in what is often referred to as the personal growth or human potential movement. It has fostered countless best-selling books, audio tape courses, video programs, and every week thousands of people pay to attend seminars, lectures, and retreats to hear motivational speakers or spiritual leaders inspire them to be better at some aspect of their lives. Some pundits have belittled the lasting effect of such techniques, referring to those who attend as seminar junkies who need a new guru every week to get themselves pumped up. Hill would not have agreed with such a cynical view. He saw diminishing motivation as a perfectly logical aspect of human nature.
Sexuality and the mastermind. The great leaders understand the necessity of the mental recharging process, and moreover, they understand how to accomplish this result. This knowledge is the main feature that distinguishes a leader from a follower. Fortunate is the person who understands this principle sufficiently well to keep his or her brain vitalized or recharged by periodically connecting it with a more vital mind. Sexual contact is one of the most effective of the stimuli through which a mind may be recharged, providing the contact is intelligently made between a man and a woman who have genuine affection for each other. Any other sort of sexual relationship is a devitalizer of the mind. Any competent practitioner of psychotherapy can recharge a brain within a few minutes. Before passing away from the brief reference made to sexual contact as a means of revitalizing a depleted mind, it seems appropriate to call attention to the fact that all of the great leaders, in whatever walks of life they have arisen, have been and are people of highly sexed natures.
Hill's position on the relationship between sexuality and creativity is complex and changes several times throughout his life. While here recommending the bond between a man and a woman, he seems not to feel impelled to recommend that leaders draw women into their mastermind groups. In later works, notably Think and Grow Rich, he alters his position to recommend sublimation of sexual energy. A factor in this may be that Hill seems to have perceived his audience to be entirely masculine. Practically speaking, the business climate of the 1920s and 1930s did not encourage independent achievement by women. In the original version of The Law of Success, virtually all examples are of men, and references to human potentiality are always written in masculine form. He talks, for example, about what a man may or must do.
There is a growing tendency upon the part of the best-informed physicians and other health practitioners to accept the theory that all diseases begin when the brain of the individual is in a depleted or devitalized state. Stated in another way, a person who has a perfectly vitalized brain is practically, if not entirely, immune from disease. Health practitioners know that nature, or the mind, cures disease in every instance where a cure is effected. Medicines, faith, laying on of hands, chiropractic, osteopathy, and all other forms of outside stimulant are nothing more than aids to nature, or, to state it correctly, mere methods of setting the chemistry of the mind into motion to the end that it readjusts the cells and tissues of the body, revitalizes the brain, and otherwise causes the human machine to function normally. The most conventional practitioner will admit the truth of this statement. What, then, may be the possibilities of the future developments in the field of mind chemistry? Through the principle of harmonious blending of minds, perfect health may be enjoyed. Through the aid of this same principle, sufficient power may be developed to solve the problem of economic pressure which constantly presses upon every individual. We may judge the future possibilities of mind chemistry by taking inventory of its past achievements, Keeping in mind the fact that these achievements have been largely the result of accidental discovery and of chance groupings of minds.
In his references to health and the power of the mind, Napoleon Hill once again demonstrates not only insight, but also what can now be seen as foresight. From the 1960s through to the end of the century, what is now commonly called the body-mind connection moved from the fringes of the New Age into the mainstream of American life. Virtually every newspaper, television news program, and popular magazine regularly features stories on the crucial role the mind plays in helping the immune system to heal the body. Techniques to use the healing powers of the mind are now taught in most medical schools and are the basis of best-selling books by Dr. O. Carl Simonton, Louise Hay, Dr. Bernie Siegel, Ken Deichtwald, Dr. Deepak Chopra, and Dr. Andrew Weil, to mention but a few of the more high-profile authors.
Mind chemistry and economic power. Mind chemistry may be appropriately applied to the workaday affairs of the economic and commercial world. Through the blending of two or more minds in a spirit of perfect harmony, the principle of mind chemistry may be made to develop sufficient power to enable the individuals whose minds have been thus blended to perform seemingly superhuman feats. Power is the force with which humans achieve success in any undertaking. Power in unlimited quantities may be enjoyed by any group of people who possess the wisdom with which to submerge their own personalities and their own immediate individual interests through the blending of their minds in a spirit of perfect harmony. Observe, profitably, the frequency with which the word harmony appears throughout this section. There can be no development of a mastermind where the element of perfect harmony does not exist. The units of one mind will not blend with the units of another mind until the two minds have been aroused and warmed, as it were, with the spirit of perfect harmony of purpose. The moment two minds begin to take divergent roads of interest, the individual units of each mind separate, and the third element, the mastermind that grew out of the friendly or harmonious alliance, will disintegrate.
Before hearing the following comments on Ford, Edison, and Firestone, once again, it is worth noting that Hill wrote this work before many of the great fortunes of America were made, and before many of the industries and businesses that play a role in contemporary life were even conceived. Hill was writing at a time when the possibility of an airline industry was barely born, and the entertainment industries, including the great Hollywood studios, the music business, and the television networks, were still awaiting the inventions that would make them possible. IBM and the aerospace industry didn't exist. The computer revolution and the internet were hardly imaginable. As this revised edition is being readied for publication in 2001, it seems somewhat anachronistic to imagine three such powerful business leaders getting together to share ideas. Today, instead of Ford, Firestone, and Edison, it would be a group such as Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos, and Michael Dell. As interesting as such a meeting would probably be, it's hard to imagine them meeting in perfect harmony, and if they did, they might well be violating a half dozen antitrust laws. Antitrust violations notwithstanding, there are more than enough modern examples of the mastermind at work. What else would you term the coming together of Spielberg, Katzenberg, and Geffen to create DreamWorks, SKG? And who hasn't heard the classic example of Wozniak and Jobs huddled in a garage, putting together the first Apple computer that launched the computer revolution?
Examples of mind chemistry in action. We come now to the study of some well-known men who have accumulated great power, also great fortunes, through the application of mind chemistry. Let us begin our study with three men who are known to be men of great achievement in their respective fields of economic, business, and professional endeavor. Their names are Henry Ford, Thomas Alva Edison, and Harvey S. Firestone. Of the three, Henry Ford is by far the most powerful if measured in economic and financial power. Mr. Ford is the most powerful man now living on earth. Many who have studied Mr. Ford believe him to be the most powerful man who ever lived. As far as is known, Ford is the only person now living, or who ever lived, with sufficient power to outwit the money trust of the United States. Ford gathers millions of dollars with as great ease as a child fills its bucket with sand when playing on the beach. It has been said by those who were in a position to know that Ford, if he needed it, could send out the call for money and gather in $1 billion and have it available for use within 1 week. No one who knows Ford's achievements doubts this. Those who know him well know that he could do it with no more effort than the average person expends in raising the money to pay a month's house rent. He could get this money if he needed it through the intelligent application of the principles on which this course is based. While Mr. Ford's new automobile was in the process of perfection in 1927, it is said that he received advance orders with cash payments for more than 375,000 cars. At an estimated price of $600 per car, this would amount to $225 million, which he received before a single car was delivered. Such is the power of confidence in Ford's ability. Thomas Edison, as everyone knows, is a philosopher, scientist, and inventor. He is perhaps the keenest Bible student on earth, a student of nature's Bible, however, and not of the myriad man-made Bibles. Mr. Edison has such a keen insight that he has harnessed and combined for the good of mankind more of nature's laws than any other person now living or who ever lived. It was he who brought together the point of a needle and a piece of revolving wax in such a way that the vibration of the human voice may be recorded and reproduced through the early phonograph. Edison first harnessed lightning and made it serve as a light for man's use through the aid of the incandescent bulb. Edison gave the world the modern moving picture. These are but a few of his outstanding achievements. The miracles that he performed, not by trickery, under the sham pretense of superhuman power, but in the very midst of the bright light of science, transcend all of the so-called miracles described in the man-made books of fiction. Harvey Firestone is the moving spirit in the great Firestone tire industry in Akron, Ohio. All three of these men began their careers, business and professional, without capital and with little formal education. All three men are now well-educated. All three are wealthy. All three are powerful. Now, let us inquire into the source of their wealth and power. Thus far, we have been dealing only with effect. The true philosopher wishes to understand the cause of a given effect.
Henry Van Dyke wrote, "Courage is the standing army of the soul which keeps it from conquest, pillage, and slavery."
It is a matter of general knowledge that Ford, Edison, and Firestone are close personal friends and have been so for many years. That in former years they were in the habit of going away to the woods once a year for a period of rest, meditation, and recuperation. But it is not generally known, it may be doubted that these men know it themselves, that there exists between the three men a bond of harmony, which has caused their minds to become blended into a mastermind which is the real source of the power of each. This mass mind, growing out of the coordination of the individual minds of Ford, Edison, and Firestone, has enabled these men to tune in on forces and sources of knowledge with which most people are unfamiliar. More than half this theory is known fact. For example, it is known that these men have great power and that they are wealthy. It is known that they began without capital and with little schooling. It is known that they form periodic mind contacts. It is known that they are harmonious and friendly. It is known that their achievements are too outstanding to be easily compared with those of others in their respective fields of activity. These men work with natural laws well known to all economists and natural scientists. As yet, chemistry of the mind is not sufficiently developed to be classed by scientific men in their catalog of known laws. A mastermind may be created by any group of people who will coordinate their minds in a spirit of perfect harmony. The group may consist of any number from two upward. Best results appear available from the blending of six or seven minds. It has been suggested that Jesus Christ discovered how to make use of the principle of mind chemistry and that his seemingly miraculous performances grew out of the power he developed through the blending of the minds of the 12 disciples. It has been pointed out that when one of the disciples, Judas Iscariot, broke faith, the mastermind immediately disintegrated, and Jesus met with supreme catastrophe.
An opposite example is Adolf Hitler, whose ability to hold the minds of his people in thrall allowed him to dominate Europe, terrify the world, and commit countless crimes against humanity. His immoral use of the mastermind was defeated only by a greater mastermind, in which leaders like Franklin Roosevelt and Winston Churchill united their people in a valiant effort. It is interesting to note that in the United States, many people had opposed going to war against Hitler and his allies. President Roosevelt, however, applied many of the principles of the law of success to persuade the public of the necessity and rightness of his course. Truly great leaders have the ability to create harmony where it does not already exist. Roosevelt's mastermind, like that of Jesus Christ, survived his death. Hitler's perished with him. Not every mastermind changes the course of history, but they can still offer important and valuable contributions. In a time when it was unusual for women to start up businesses, Mary Kay Ash invested her life savings in developing and marketing a line of cosmetics. To make her venture a success, she created a mastermind with the women who sold her products. Because so many doors to success were closed to women in that time, she found that when she gave her sales reps an opportunity no one else offered, they responded by working hard for themselves and for her. She used a series of distinctive, highly visible rewards as incentives, most notably the famous pink Mary Kay Cadillacs. Today, more than 200,000 women worldwide sell Mary Kay cosmetics, part of a powerfully successful mastermind.
When two or more people harmonize their minds and produce the effect known as a mastermind, each person in the group becomes vested with the power to contact with and gather knowledge through the subconscious minds of all the other members of the group. This power becomes immediately noticeable, having the effect of stimulating the mind to a higher rate of vibration and otherwise evidencing itself in the form of a more vivid imagination and the consciousness of what appears to be a sixth sense. It is through this sixth sense that new ideas will flash into the mind. These ideas take on the nature and form of the subject, dominating the mind of the individual. If the entire group has met for the purpose of discussing a given subject, ideas concerning that subject will come pouring into the minds of all present as if an outside influence were dictating them. The minds of those participating in the mastermind become like magnets, attracting ideas and thoughts of the most highly organized and practical nature from no one knows where. The process of mind blending, here described as a mastermind, may be likened to the act of one who connects many electrical batteries to a single transmission wire, thereby stepping up the power flowing over that line. Each battery added increases the power passing over that line by the amount of energy the battery carries. Just so, in the case of blending individual minds into a mastermind, each mind, through the principle of mind chemistry, stimulates all the other minds in the group until the mind energy thus becomes so great that it penetrates to and connects with the universal energy known as ether, which, in turn, touches every atom of the entire universe. The modern radio apparatus substantiates to a considerable extent the theory here expounded. Powerful sending or broadcasting stations must be erected through which the vibration of sound is stepped up before it can be picked up by the much higher vibrating energy of the ether and carried in all directions. A mastermind made up of many individual minds so blended that they produce a strong vibrating energy constitutes almost an exact counterpart of the radio broadcasting station. Every public speaker has felt the influence of mind chemistry, for it is a well-known fact that as soon as the individual minds of an audience become en rapport, that is, attuned to the rate of vibration of the mind of the speaker with the speaker, then there is a noticeable increase of enthusiasm in the speaker's mind, and he often rises to heights of oratory which surprise all, including himself. The first 5 to 10 minutes of the average speech are devoted to what is known as warming up. By this is meant the process through which the minds of the speaker and his audience are becoming blended in a spirit of perfect harmony. Every speaker knows what happens when this state of perfect harmony fails to materialize upon the part of his audience. The seemingly supernatural phenomena occurring in spiritualistic meetings are the result of the reaction upon one another of the minds in the group. These phenomena seldom begin to manifest themselves in less than 10 to 20 minutes after the group is formed, for the reason that this is about the time required for the minds in the group to become harmonized or blended.
Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote, "Men cease to interest us when we find their limitations. The only sin is limitation. As soon as you once come up to a man's limitations, it is all over with him."
Vibrations. The messages received by members of a spiritualistic group probably come from one of two sources, or from both. First, from the vast storehouse of the subconscious mind of some member of the group, or from the universal storehouse, in which I believe all thought vibration is preserved. Neither any known natural law nor human reason supports the theory of communication with individuals who have died. Any individual may explore the store of knowledge in another's mind through this principle of mind chemistry, and it seems reasonable to suppose that this power may be extended to include contact with whatever vibrations are available in the ether, if there are any. Matter and energy, the two known elements of the universe, may be transformed, but neither created nor destroyed. The theory that all the higher and more refined vibrations, such as those of thought, are preserved, grows out of that fact. It is reasonable to suppose that all vibrations which have been stepped up sufficiently will go on forever. The lower vibrations probably live a natural life and die out. All the so-called geniuses probably gained their reputations because, by mere chance or otherwise, they formed alliances with other minds which enabled them to step up their own mind vibrations and enabled them to contact the vast temple of knowledge recorded and filed in the ether of the universe. Inquiring further into the source of economic power as manifested by the achievements of men in the field of business, let us study the case of the Chicago group known as the Big Six. This group consists of William Wrigley, Jr., who owns the chewing gum business bearing his name, and whose individual income is said to be more than $15 million a year, John R. Thompson, who operates the chain of lunchrooms bearing his name, Mr. Lasker, who owns the Lord & Thomas Advertising Agency, Mr. McCullough, who owns the Parmalee Express Company, the largest transfer business in America, and Mr. Ritchie and Mr. Hertz, who own the yellow taxicab business. A reliable financial reporting company has estimated the yearly income of these six men at upwards of $25 million, or an average of more than $4 million a year per man. Analysis of the entire group of six men discloses the fact that not one of them had any special educational advantages, that all began without capital or extensive credit, and that their financial achievement has been due to their own individual plans and not to any fortunate turn of the wheel of chance. Many years ago, these six men formed a friendly alliance, meeting at stated periods for the purpose of assisting one another with ideas and suggestions in their various lines of business. With the exception of Hertz and Ritchie, none of the six men was in any manner associated in a legal partnership. These meetings were strictly for the purpose of cooperating on a give-and-take basis, assisting one another with ideas and suggestions, and occasionally endorsing notes and other securities to assist some member of the group who had met with an emergency. It is said that each of the individuals belonging to this Big Six group is a millionaire many times over. As a rule, there is nothing worthy of special comment on behalf of a man who does nothing more than accumulate a few million dollars. However, there is something connected with the financial successes of this particular group of men that is well worth comment, study, analysis, and even emulation. And that something is the fact that they have learned how to coordinate their individual minds by blending them in a spirit of perfect harmony, thereby creating a mastermind that unlocks to each individual of the group doors which are closed to most of the human race. The United States Steel Corporation is one of the strongest and most powerful industrial organizations in the world. The idea out of which this great industrial giant grew was born in the mind of Elbert H. Gary, a more or less commonplace small-town lawyer who was born and reared near Chicago. Mr. Gary surrounded himself with a group of men whose minds he successfully blended in a spirit of perfect harmony, thereby creating the mastermind, which is the moving spirit of the United States Steel Corporation. Search where you will, wherever you find an outstanding success in business, finance, industry, or in any of the professions, you may be sure that back of the success is some individual who has applied the principle of mind chemistry out of which a mastermind has been created. These outstanding successes often appear to be the handiwork of but one person, but search closely, and the other individuals whose minds have been coordinated with his own may be found. Remember that two or more persons may operate the principle of mind chemistry so as to create a mastermind.
One of the most notable success stories of the computer age is the Intel Corporation. As this edition is being readied for republication, Intel dominates the computer chip business worldwide, leading the quest to invent newer and faster chips. The most famous figure at Intel is Andrew Grove, the company's CEO, once an immigrant who supported himself waiting tables. Grove's keen skills as a manager, however, are only a part of the reason for Intel's success. For Grove is part of a mastermind that includes Robert Noyce and Gordon Moore, the men whose technical knowledge and innovation helped drive the company forward. Each of these men is brilliant in his own right, but together they have made their company into the clear leader in its field and one of the most consistently profitable businesses in the volatile high-tech industry.
Organized knowledge. Power is organized knowledge expressed through intelligent efforts. No effort can be said to be organized unless the individuals engaged in the effort coordinate their knowledge and energy in a spirit of perfect harmony. Lack of such harmonious coordination of effort is the main cause of practically every business failure. I conducted an interesting experiment in collaboration with the students of a well-known college. Each student was requested to write an essay on how and why Henry Ford became wealthy. Each student was required to describe as part of his or her essay what was believed to be the nature of Ford's real assets, of what these assets consisted in detail. The majority of the students gathered financial statements and inventories of the Ford assets and used these as the basis of their estimates of Ford's wealth. The sources of Ford's wealth included cash in banks, raw and finished materials in stock, real estate and buildings, and goodwill, estimated at from 10 to 25% of the value of the material assets. One student, out of the entire group of several hundred, answered as follows, quote, Henry Ford's assets consist in the main of two items, that is, one, working capital and raw and finished materials, and two, the knowledge gained from experience of Henry Ford himself and the cooperation of a well-trained organization which understands how to apply this knowledge to best advantage from the Ford viewpoint. It is impossible to estimate with anything approximating correctness the actual dollars and cents value of either of these two groups of assets, but it is my opinion that their relative values are the organized knowledge of the Ford organization, 75%. The value of cash and physical assets of every nature, including raw and finished materials, 25%. Unquote. Unquestionably, the biggest asset that Henry Ford has is his own brain. Next to this would come the brains of his immediate circle of associates, for it has been through coordination of these that the physical assets that he controls were accumulated. Destroy every plant the Ford Motor Company owns, every piece of machinery, every atom of raw or finished material, every finished automobile, and every dollar on deposit in any bank, and Ford would still be the most powerful man economically on Earth. The brains that have built the Ford business could duplicate it again in short order. Capital is always available in unlimited quantities to such brains as Ford's.
You cannot become a power in your community nor achieve enduring success in any worthy undertaking until you become big enough to blame yourself for your own mistakes and reverses.
Ford is the most economically powerful man on Earth because he has the keenest and most practical conception of the principle of organized knowledge of any man on Earth. Despite Ford's great power and financial success, it may be that he has blundered often in the application of the principles through which he accumulated this power. There is little doubt that Ford's methods of mind coordination have often been crude. They were bound to be so in the earlier days of his experience, before he gained the wisdom of application that would naturally go with maturity of years. There can't be much doubt that Ford's application of the principle of mind chemistry was, at least at the start, the result of a chance alliance with other minds, particularly the mind of Edison. It is more than probable that Mr. Ford's remarkable insight into the laws of nature was first begun as the result of his friendly alliance with his own wife, long before he ever met either Mr. Edison or Mr. Firestone. Many a man who never knows the real source of his success is made by his wife through application of the mastermind principle. Mrs. Ford is a most remarkably intelligent woman, and I believe that it was her mind, blended with Mr. Ford's, which gave him his first real start toward power. It may be mentioned without in any way depriving Ford of any honor or glory that in his earlier days he had to combat the powerful enemies of illiteracy and ignorance to a greater extent than did either Edison or Firestone, both of whom were gifted by natural heredity with a most fortunate aptitude for acquiring and applying knowledge. Ford had to hew this talent out of the rough, raw timbers of his hereditary estate. Within an inconceivably short period of time, Ford has mastered three of the most stubborn enemies of mankind and transformed them into assets constituting the very foundation of his success. These enemies are ignorance, illiteracy, and poverty. Anyone who can stay the hand of these three savage forces, much less harness and use them to good account, is well worth close study by the less fortunate individuals. This is an age of industrial power in which we are living. The source of all this power is organized effort. Not only has the management of industrial enterprises efficiently organized individual workers, but in many instances, mergers of industry have been effected in such a manner and to the end that these combinations, as in the case of the United States Steel Corporation, for example, have accumulated practically unlimited power. One may hardly glance at the news of a day's events without seeing a report of some business, industrial, or financial merger bringing under one management enormous resources and thus creating great power. One day it is a group of banks. Another day it is a chain of railroads. The next day it is a combination of steel plants, all merging for the purpose of developing power through highly organized and coordinated effort. Knowledge, general in nature and unorganized, is not power. It is only potential power, the raw material out of which real power may be developed. Any modern library contains an unorganized record of all the knowledge of value to which the present stage of civilization is heir. But this knowledge is not power, because it is not organized. Every form of energy and every species of animal or plant life to survive must be organized. The oversized animals whose remains have filled nature's boneyard through extinction have left mute but certain evidence that non-organization means annihilation. From the smallest particle of matter to the largest star in the universe, these and every material thing in between these two extremes offer proof positive that one of nature's first laws is that of organization. Fortunate is the individual who recognizes the importance of this law and makes it his business to familiarize himself with the various ways in which the law may be applied to advantage. The astute businessman has not only recognized the importance of the law of organized effort, but he has made this law the warp and the woof of his power. Without any knowledge whatsoever of the principle of mind chemistry, or that such a principle exists, many influential persons have accumulated great power by merely organizing the knowledge they possessed. The majority of all who have discovered the principle of mind chemistry and developed that principle into a mastermind have stumbled upon this knowledge by the merest of accident, often failing to recognize the real nature of their discovery or to understand the source of their power. I am of the opinion that all living persons who at the present time are consciously making use of the principle of mind chemistry and developing power through the blending of minds may be counted on the fingers of the two hands, with perhaps several fingers left to spare. If this estimate is even approximately true, there is little danger that the field of mind chemistry will become overcrowded. It is a well-known fact that one of the most difficult tasks anyone in business must perform is inducing associates to coordinate their efforts in a spirit of harmony. To induce continuous cooperation between a group of workers in any undertaking is next to impossible. Only the most efficient leaders can accomplish this highly desired objective. But once in a great while, such a leader will rise above the horizon in the field of industry, business, or finance, and then the world hears of a Henry Ford, a Thomas A. Edison, a John D. Rockefeller Sr., an E. H. Harriman, or a James J. Hill. Power and success are practically synonymous terms. One grows out of the other. Therefore, any person who has the knowledge and the ability to develop power through the principle of harmonious cooperation of effort between individual minds, or in any other manner, may be successful in any reasonable undertaking that is possible of successful termination.
Never in the history of the world has there been such abundant opportunity as there is now for the person who is willing to serve before trying to collect.
Harmony. It must not be assumed that a mastermind will immediately spring mushroom fashion out of every group of minds which make pretense of coordination in a spirit of harmony. Harmony, in the real sense of meaning of the word, is as rare among groups of people as is genuine Christianity among those who proclaim themselves Christians. Harmony is the nucleus around which the state of mind known as mastermind must be developed. Without this element of harmony, there can be no mastermind, a truth which cannot be repeated too often. Woodrow Wilson had in mind the development of a mastermind to be composed of groups of minds representing the civilized nations of the world in his proposal for establishing the League of Nations.
The League of Nations that Hill refers to was established in 1920, after World War I, for the purpose of promoting world peace and cooperation. And though it was first proposed by President Woodrow Wilson, the United States never joined the organization, which seriously impeded its effectiveness. After the Second World War, the League of Nations was superseded by the creation of the United Nations, of which America was one of the founding nations. Unfortunately, the UN has not often lived up to Hill's conception of a mastermind, which requires that the participants come together in perfect harmony.
Wilson's conception was the most far-reaching humanitarian idea ever created in the mind of man because it dealt with a principle that embraces sufficient power to establish a real brotherhood of man on earth. The League of Nations, or some similar blending of international minds in a spirit of harmony, is sure to become a reality. The time when such unity of minds will take place will be measured largely by the time required for the great universities and non-sectarian institutions of learning to supplant ignorance and superstition with understanding and wisdom. This time is rapidly approaching.
Failure to develop a mastermind can create enormous, embarrassing fiascos. The Metropolitan Transit Authority of New York owned a valuable piece of property on Columbus Circle, one of the city's busiest intersections. The old Coliseum there had been made obsolete by a new convention center, so the Transit Authority decided to sell the land to a developer for a new building. Several companies bid, and a winner was selected. When the design for the building was unveiled, however, there was enormous public outcry, for the building was so large that its shadow would lie over vast stretches of Central Park. So the developers paid for a new building design, but it too was greeted with public dismay, for it made only a token effort to address the many objections. Citizen groups circulated petitions and threatened lawsuits. Wealthy individuals who lived in the neighborhood protested just as loudly as people on the street, because all felt that the park was threatened. The transit authority, the developer, even the city government tried to make the building happen. But at every turn, they were stymied by people who were outraged. Finally, the developer gave up. Hundreds of millions of dollars had been spent on the project, the transit authority lost its sale, construction jobs were lost, and the Coliseum sat empty and unused for a decade. All this because the leaders of the project failed to create harmony among the people of the city.
The psychology of the revival meeting. The old religious orgy, known as the revival, offers a favorable opportunity to study the principle of mind chemistry, known as mastermind. It will be observed that music plays no small part in bringing about the harmony essential to the blending of a group of minds in a revival meeting. Without music, the revival meeting would be a tame affair. During revival services, the leader of the meeting has no difficulty in creating harmony in the minds of his devotees. But it is a well-known fact that this state of harmony lasts no longer than the presence of the leader, after which the mastermind he has temporarily created disintegrates. By arousing the emotional nature of his followers, the revivalist has no difficulty, with the proper stage-setting music, in creating a mastermind which becomes noticeable to all who come in contact with it. The very air becomes charged with a positive, pleasing influence that changes the entire chemistry of all minds present. The revivalist calls this energy the Spirit of the Lord. Through experiments conducted with a group of scientific investigators and laymen who were unaware of the nature of the experiment, I have created the same state of mind and the same positive atmosphere without calling it the Spirit of the Lord. On many occasions, I have witnessed the creation of the same positive atmosphere in a group of men and women engaged in the business of salesmanship without calling it the Spirit of the Lord. I once helped conduct a school of salesmanship for Harrison Parker, founder of the Cooperative Society of Chicago, and by the use of the principle of mind chemistry that revivalists call the Spirit of the Lord, so transformed the nature of a group of 3,000 men and women, all of whom were without former sales experience, that they sold more than $10 million worth of securities in less than 9 months and earned more than $1 million for themselves. It was found that the average person who joined this school would reach the zenith of his or her selling power within 1 week, after which it was necessary to revitalize the individual's brain through a group sales meeting. These sales meetings were conducted on very much the same order as are the modern revival meetings, with much the same stage equipment, including music and high-powered speakers who exhorted the salespeople.
Not to belabor the obvious, but the style of presentation that Hill refers to in commenting on the similarity between revival meetings and his sales meeting can also be seen at almost any self-help or personal growth seminar.
Call it religion, psychology, mind chemistry, or anything you please, they are all based upon the same principle. But there is nothing more certain than the fact that wherever a group of minds are brought into contact in a spirit of perfect harmony, each mind in the group becomes immediately supplemented and reinforced by a noticeable energy called a mastermind. For all this writer professes to know, this uncharted energy may be the Spirit of the Lord, but it operates just as favorably when called by any other name. The human brain and nervous system constitute a piece of intricate machinery which but few, if any, understand. When controlled and properly directed, this piece of machinery can be made to perform wonders of achievement, and if not controlled, it will perform wonders fantastic and phantom-like in nature, as may be seen by examining the inmates of any insane asylum. The human brain has direct connection with a continuous influx of energy from which we derive our power to think. The brain receives this energy, mixes it with the energy created by the food taken into the body, and distributes it to every portion of the body through the aid of the blood and the nervous system. It thus becomes what we call life. Every normal human body possesses a first-class chemical laboratory and a stock of chemicals sufficient to carry on the business of breaking up, assimilating, and properly mixing and compounding the food we take into the body, preparatory to and distributing it to, wherever it is needed as a bodybuilder. Tests have been made both with humans and animals to prove that the energy known as the mind plays an important part in this chemical operation of compounding and transforming food into the required substances to build and keep the body in repair. It is known that worry, excitement, or fear will interfere with the digestive process, and in extreme cases stop this process altogether, resulting in illness or death. It is obvious, then, that the mind enters into the chemistry of food digestion and distribution. It is believed by many eminent authorities, although it may never have been scientifically proved, that the energy known as mind or thought may become contaminated with negative or so-called unsociable elements, causing the whole nervous system to be thrown out of working order. Digestion is interfered with, and various diseases will manifest themselves. Financial difficulties and unrequited love affairs head the list of the causes of such emotional disturbances. A negative environment, such as that existing where some member of the family is constantly nagging, will interfere with the chemistry of the mind to the point that the individual loses ambition and gradually sinks into oblivion. It is because of this fact that the old saying that a man's wife may either make or break him is literally true. In a subsequent lesson, a whole section on this subject is addressed to spouses. Anyone knows that certain food combinations will, if taken into the stomach, result in indigestion, violent pain, and even death. Good health depends, in part, at least, upon a food combination that harmonizes. But harmony of food combinations is not sufficient to ensure good health. There must be harmony also between the elements of energy known as the mind.
A man is half-whipped the minute he begins to feel sorry for himself, or to spin an alibi with which he would explain away his defects.
Harmony. Harmony seems to be one of nature's laws, without which there can be no such thing as organized energy or life in any form whatsoever. The health of the body, as well as the mind, is literally built around, out of, and upon the principle of harmony. The energy known as life begins to disintegrate, and death approaches when the organs of the body stop working in harmony. The moment harmony ceases at the source of any form of organized energy or power, the units of that energy are thrown into a chaotic state of disorder, and the power is rendered neutral or passive. Harmony is also the nucleus around which the principle of mind chemistry known as a mastermind develops power. Destroy this harmony, and you destroy the power that can grow out of the coordinated effort of a group of individual minds. This truth has been stated, restated, and presented in every manner that I could conceive with unending repetition. Unless you grasp this principle and learn to apply it, this lesson is useless. Success in life, no matter what one may call success, is very largely a matter of adaptation to environment in such a manner that there is harmony between the individual and his environment. The palace of a king becomes as a hovel of a peasant if harmony does not abound within its walls. Conversely, the hut of a peasant may be made to yield more happiness than the mansion of the rich man if harmony obtains in the former and not in the latter. Without perfect harmony, the science of astronomy would be as useless as the bones of a saint, because the stars and planets would clash with one another and all would be in a state of chaos and disorder. Without the law of harmony, an acorn might grow into a heterogeneous tree consisting of the wood of the oak, poplar, maple, and whatnot. Without the law of harmony, there can be no organization of knowledge. For what, may one ask, is organized knowledge except the harmony of facts and truths and natural laws? The moment discord begins to creep in at the front door, harmony edges out at the back door, so to speak, whether the application is made to a business partnership or the orderly movement of the planets of the heavens. If you gather the impression that I am laying undue stress upon the importance of harmony, remember that lack of harmony is the first and often the last and only cause of failure. There can be no poetry, nor music, nor oratory worthy of notice without the presence of harmony. Good architecture is largely a matter of harmony. Without harmony, a house is nothing but a mass of building material, more or less a monstrosity. Sound business management plants the very sinews of its existence in harmony. Every well-dressed man or woman is a living picture and a moving example of harmony. With all these workaday illustrations of the important part which harmony plays in the affairs of the world, nay, in the operation of the entire universe, how could any intelligent person leave harmony out of his definite chief aim in life? Could any definite aim in life omit harmony as the chief stone of its foundation? Knowledge and power. The human body is a complex organization of organs, glands, blood vessels, nerves, brain cells, muscles, etc. The mind that stimulates to action and coordinates the efforts of the component parts of the body is also a plurality of ever-varying and changing energies. From birth until death, there is continuous struggle, often assuming the nature of open combat between the forces of the mind. For example, the lifelong struggle between the motivating forces and desires of the human mind, which takes place between the impulses of right and wrong, is well known to everyone. Every human being possesses at least 2 distinct personalities, and as many as 6 distinct personalities have been discovered in one person. One of man's most delicate tasks is that of harmonizing these mind forces so that they may be organized and directed toward the orderly attainment of a given objective. Without this element of harmony, no individual can become an accurate thinker. It is no wonder that leaders in business and industrial enterprises, as well as those in politics and other fields of endeavor, find it so difficult to organize groups of people so they will function in the attainment of a given objective without friction. Each individual human being possesses inner forces that are hard to harmonize, even when placed in the environment most favorable to harmony. If the chemistry of the individual's mind is such that the units of the mind cannot be easily harmonized, think how much more difficult it must be to harmonize a group of minds so that they will function as one in an orderly manner through a mastermind. The leader who successfully develops and directs the energies of a mastermind must possess tact, patience, persistence, self-confidence, intimate knowledge of mind chemistry, and the ability to adapt in a state of perfect poise and harmony to quickly changing circumstances without showing the least sign of annoyance. How many are there who can measure up to this requirement? The successful leader must possess the ability to change the color of the mind chameleon-like to fit every circumstance that arises in connection with the object of leadership. Moreover, he or she must possess the ability to change from one mood to another without showing the slightest signs of anger or lack of self-control. The successful leader must understand the 17 laws of success and be able to put into practice any combination of these 17 laws whenever occasion demands. Without this ability, no leader can be powerful, and without power, no leader can long endure. The meaning of education. There has long been a general misconception of the meaning of the word educate. The dictionaries have not aided in the elimination of this misunderstanding because they have defined the word educate as an act of imparting knowledge. The word educate has its roots in the Latin word educo, which means to develop from within, to educe, to draw out, to grow through the law of use. Nature hates idleness in all its forms. She gives continuous life only to those elements that are in use. Tie up an arm or any other portion of the body, taking it out of use, and the idle part will soon atrophy and become lifeless. Reverse the order. Give an arm more than normal use, such as that engaged in by the blacksmith who wields a heavy hammer all day long, and that arm, developed from within, grows strong. Organized knowledge in action. Power grows out of organized knowledge, but mind you, it grows out of it through application and use. A person may become a walking encyclopedia of knowledge without possessing any power of value. This knowledge becomes power only to the extent that it is organized, classified, and put into action. Some of the best educated people the world has known possessed much less general knowledge than some who have been known as fools. The difference between the two being that the former put what knowledge they possessed into use, while the latter made no such application. An educated person is one who knows how to acquire everything needed in the attainment of the main purpose in life without violating the rights of others. By that definition, many knowledgeable individuals come nowhere near qualifying as educated. It might also be a great surprise to many who believe they suffer from lack of learning to know that they are well educated.
Seek the counsel of men who will tell you the truth about yourself, even if it hurts you to hear it. Mere commendation will not bring the improvement you need.
The uses of learning. The successful lawyer is not necessarily the one who memorizes the greatest number of principles of law. On the contrary, the successful lawyer is the one who knows where to find a principle of law, plus a variety of opinions supporting that principle which fit the immediate needs of a given case. In other words, the successful lawyer is the one who knows where to find the law he or she wants when needed. This principle applies with equal force to the affairs of industry and business. Henry Ford had but little elementary schooling, yet he is one of the best educated men in the world. because he has acquired the ability so to combine natural and economic laws, to say nothing of the minds of men, that he has the power to get anything of a material nature he wants.
Henry Ford is only one example. Albert Einstein could barely eke out a living as a patent clerk until he began organizing his knowledge of physics. U.S. President Harry S. Truman had nothing more than a high school education. He laughed once that he was such a poor speller that when he wrote the word dictionary, he said, "I had to look on the back to see how to spell the book itself." But all of these men commanded power in different ways.
During the First World War, Mr. Ford brought suit against the Chicago Tribune, charging that newspaper with libelous publication of statements concerning him, one of which was the statement that Ford was an ignoramus, an ignorant pacifist, etc. When the suit came up for trial, the attorneys for the Tribune undertook to prove, through Ford himself, that their statement was true, that he was ignorant, and with this object in view, they catechized and cross-examined him on all manner of subjects. One question they asked was, how many soldiers did the British send over to subdue the rebellion in the colonies in 1776? With a dry grin on his face, Ford nonchalantly replied, "I do not know just how many, but I have heard that it was a lot more than ever went back." Loud laughter from the court, jury, courtroom spectators, and even from the frustrated lawyer who had asked the question. This line of interrogation was continued for an hour or more, Ford keeping perfectly calm the meanwhile. Finally, however, he had permitted the smart-aleck lawyers to play with him until he was tired of it, and in reply to a question which was particularly obnoxious and insulting, Ford straightened himself up, pointed his finger at the questioning lawyer, and replied, quote, "If I should really wish to answer the foolish question you have just asked, or any of the others you have been asking, let me remind you that I have a row of electric push buttons hanging over my desk, and by placing my finger on the right button, I could call in men who could give me the correct answer to all the questions you have asked, and to many that you have not the intelligence either to ask or answer. Now will you kindly tell me why I should bother about filling my mind with a lot of useless details in order to answer every fool question that anyone may ask when I have able men all about me who can supply me with all the facts I want when I call for them?"